CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hello again, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Out of Touch Thursday, and here's why. All right, let me back up a little bit. That's out of touch, ironic out of touch, a satirical out of touch. Not really out of touch, just like irony, man. So I got a call from a dear friend, Lori Glenn. Shout out, Lori Glenn. She goes, Ben, you have Graciela Guzman on your show to talk about health benefits for immigrants. Adults and health benefits for immigrant seniors, a very important issue. We just released a report, and you got her. You absolutely must have her on. That's how generally Lori Glenn talks to me, bosses me around, has been bossing me around since approximately 1988. Every now and then I push back. So I said, absolutely, yes. And she sent me the report. I read the report, and it is a very compassionate and dispassionate. I know that sounds like a contradiction report. It's compassionate, and that there's compassion for immigrants. And it's dispassionate in that it's heavily emphasis on the benefits that immigrants bring to society. And I thought, wow, if there was ever a document that is out of touch with the tone and the tenor of our time, this is it. Number one, compassion. Wow, this is not a very compassionate time, ladies and gentlemen, as everybody knows. Everybody's got a strong opinion. Everybody's venting their opinion. Everybody hates each other. And we're about to have fascism. In our country. Wow. That's what the polls say. Donald Trump, who's currently on trial for paying off a porn star to shut up and not tell a story about how they had a one night affair, took a break from the courthouse. He went on the road to Wisconsin, and I think he was in Michigan as well, railing, among other things, at, you know, the media, the corrupt judges, the crooked Justice Department. Everyone hates him. Everyone's against him. And then immigrants. And he's like talking about having camps at the border, mass camps. Just as soon as someone tries to get in this country, throw them in the camp. And it seems like it's being popular. You know, the left is so divided these days. I don't get a unified voice out of the left on this, on the whole issue of immigrant rights. And here in the city of Chicago, and Graciela and I talked about this, I think the last time she was on the show, the reaction to Venezuelan migrants was so extreme in all communities throughout the city. People are mad at Brandon Johnson. You know, people blaming Brandon Johnson. Brandon Johnson doesn't know what to do. So it's just like if you're going to put up shelters, temporary shelters and neighborhoods all over the city, you have recent immigrants themselves showing up, meeting and screaming, not here. Send them back. Man, send them back. It's deep. Send them back. People have recently moved to this country saying send them back. So it doesn't seem like it's a very compassionate time on this particular issue, even though we are a country of immigrants. You know, I have this conversation all the time with Steve Kraft, comes to the show from Arizona. He talks about the strange dual mentality of Arizonians who are like, yeah, we have to be tough at the border. Meanwhile, if it wasn't for immigrants, they would have like, I don't know, who would be mowing their lawns? Who would be operating their restaurants? Who would be like driving, doing construction work? I mean, their economy is so linked to new immigrants. It's like this strange, bizarre, schizophrenic attitude that America has. On one hand, they recognize the need for new residents. And the other hand, there's just this hatred that's being expressed all the time. So I'm reading, and I'm going to bring Graciela on, recently elected. I call her the state senator. She's not state senator yet. She's candidate state senator. So I'm reading this report, Graciela, about how significant and important immigrants are to the Illinois economy and how important it is to continue to offer them health care and benefits. And I'm like, wow, this makes so much freaking sense. And yet it's so out of touch with where we are, like as a country right now. I just kind of want to explore that a little bit before we get into some of the contemporary issues of the day, issues of the day. So first of all, welcome back, Cotter, to my humble little podcast. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Ben. Thanks for having me. Yes. And so the last time Russell was on, she was taking a victory lap of sorts. She won the Democratic primary for state Senate in the 20th. I'm doing that at the top of my head. And I don't even know if she has a Republican candidate.
I do.
Oh, she. OK. All right. Don't take nothing for granted. OK. Take nothing for granted. So she's has November. There will be an election. And if she's victorious, she will be the state senator. I believe she will be victorious. This is one of the most progressive districts in the city of Chicago. As dispassionate, as cold as we may be toward this larger issue, I can't imagine your district going MAGA. All right. So, Graciela, you heard my introduction. That's my general theme. Your general thoughts on the issue, like the schizophrenic notion that I described, where we welcome immigrants because we want them to handle jobs that Americans who've been here for longer don't do. And at the same time, we scapegoat them and blame them for everything, for so much that is going wrong. Are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, no, I thank you for the framing. You know, I think in a large part, when I think about the report and why it was necessary, the Healthy Illinois campaign has been organizing around a push for healthcare for all people for, this has been a multi-year campaign, right? And ultimately the report is really coming after multiple years of misinformation, fear-mongering, and, you know, some really ugly talking points that have weaponized the presence of immigrant communities across our state to pundits and folks that posit that our immigrant community is taking more out of our economy and state than they're putting in. And I think this like broader conversation about what is our vested stake as like people and community to each other to build towards a transformational world where folks have healthcare, right? Regardless of immigration status, regardless of income, regardless of any of those things, right? And so what the report really seeks to do is to establish fact, right? That the amount that has been spent on health benefits for immigrant elders and adults in our state comprises a really small portion of our budget. In fact, it's only 0.6% of the budget. And when we hold it in relation to our entire healthcare budget, it's a really small sliver. Two, though, that immigrant communities are doing more than paying their fair share into the system. The spending power of immigrant populations around our state is really important to the tax base. And I think what you said was actually one of the most emotional pieces for me to read in the report, that our economy depends on immigrants in Illinois to do unmet labor needs, and that these jobs are dangerous in many instances, put them in direct harm's way, do not grant them access to healthcare coverage. And then at the same time, we seek to cut or to not expand our pathways to coverage, right? But from a broader standpoint, you know, I think talking about uncompassionate times, it is really difficult when we're living in a scarcity mindset that pits immigrant against immigrant category sometimes, citizens against immigrants, issues against issues, right? And I think for me, it really underbellies kind of what I call about in our inner district sometimes, the lack of legislative imagination that we can have, because the scarcity mindset feeds that because we don't have enough revenue or enough budget, you know, we're not able to fund things that are must-haves in our community. And so my hope out of the report is that we can set the record straight about the return on investment in our state, that we can get on the same page about our commitment and value towards advancing a healthcare system that makes sense and dignifies care and compassion for all people, regardless of their ability to work or have income or be able to qualify. And three, that we can really think about what are the other players in this conversation that have been, for their own gain, perpetuating anti-immigrant sentiment to not only try to stave off this program, but really to create confusion and progress towards this issue.
And is there a real danger that this program will be severely cut or eliminated even here in the state of Illinois?
Yeah, so I mean, we're in a kind of interesting spot. This year, the program saw some stopgaps in the sense that co-pays were introduced for folks in the program. There is an enrollment cap at the moment, which means that no new enrollment can happen on these programs. And at the same time, there's been some movement of people away from the program into other forms of health insurance coverage. So we're seeing a reduction in the number of people that are in this program right now over last year, right? And so at the same time, Governor Pritzker has committed $629 million to be allotted towards the budget for the program next year, which is a really great start. And I think how we build on that is to actually restore the program to its full intent, which means that we open up the program for new enrollment, that we restore the conversation around benefits. And that's really what the coalition is asking for at this point, is to continue building on what we know is a tried and tested and successful program in our community, that when we put coverage in the hands of people, people live. They live and they are able to do all kinds of beautiful things in our community. And I got to tell you, from knocking doors, I had people that were coming to me saying, I was able to treat my cancer because of this coverage. I was able to get access to a therapist that I desperately needed to treat my depression. I was able to return to work because now I have insulin for my diabetes. I'm able to take care of my children and be a much whole parent, because I'm able to have access to the resource they need, that they needed. Point of the story is, healthcare coverage can be life affirming and changing, and everybody should have a right to it.
Is there a vocal opposition? Is there anybody in particular championing opposition to the notion of providing healthcare? Just such an absurd thing. But is there a vocal opposition?
I think the biggest line of opposition has been select moderate and conservative and Republican voices that, have argued about the ballooning effect of the fiscal impact of this program. At the end of the day, that's another reason that the report is so important, I think, to really put in context, again, how much the spending on this program relates to our total budget and also to healthcare. But predominantly, it's been the fiscal argument.
Man, a fiscal argument is such a joke. I'm just laughing because it's utterly absurd. I mean, the stuff we spend money on in our country, how many billions of dollars in arms aid were just passed? Delia Ramirez was on the show last week. We were talking about her votes on Ukraine aid and aid to Israel, and just absolute like billions and billions of dollars to manufacture weapons that will kill people. I didn't see any. There was opposition from MAGA, but it was not over the concept of spending billions and billions of dollars in weaponry. I think it was more opposition. They like Putin over more than they like Ukraine. So strange, twisted times. When I listened to read the report and listened to the defense that it's not really that expensive, that it saves money. You know what? It reminded me, Graciela, back in the. I know this is years ago, about 14 years ago, when Tony Preckwinkle, President Preckwinkle, was first starting to talk about legalizing marijuana, but wasn't doing with legalizing marijuana. There was like that first step to decriminalization. So, and she would talk about in terms of we're spending so much money on criminalizing this by arresting people. Prosecuting people and putting them in jail, incarcerating, we could save on tax dollars if we decriminalize. And her argument at the time was like, if this is what it takes to get people to do the right thing, then this is the argument I will make, even though the most obvious argument was that everybody is smoking reefer and only Black people get arrested for it. That is pretty... Talk about schizophrenic attitudes toward issues of the day. That would be the most compelling reason to legalize it. But do you follow what I'm saying? The most politically palpable one was to talk about the dollars and cents. Your thoughts?
I think so. And I actually think this is another place where, talking about longitudinal vision, right? The program, it's really in its infancy stages in terms of how long we've let it run here, here in the state of Illinois. And so that's a great start, but we've got a lot to build on. I think what the report does well is it leans into what we know about, long-term healthcare growth. world through the Affordable Care Act, right? And so a lot of the arguments that are made against this program, folks said at the beginning of the Affordable Care Act, wow, the sickest people are coming to acute medical care first. It's really, really expensive. We have difficulties with keeping folks enrolled. A lot of parallels there. And what we actually saw is that the longer that folks have coverage, the better access to preventative care they're able to have. So they're getting dental visits, breast exams, mammograms, checkups, right? And it means that we're actually able to help get people healthier and stabler and more stable, sorry, faster. And the direct impact in parallel is like we have safety nets and hospital systems across the state that are meeting those needs right now through uncompensated care, right? And that's not a comprehensive healthcare system. We need to support it. The best path to do that is through coverage. And so one, if we want to see better health outcomes and a better state, we do that through coverage. But I also think that's part of the strain of having a program that has started and then been stopped, right? You actually lose some of the benefits of what we got started on. And so I think if we could get back on the program and think about like the partnerships that we need to have to be able to continue to sustain it, we can avoid preventable admission. We can stop, you know, care that's being postponed in our community. We can reduce the financial strain that so many people feel about whether they're going to be able to meet medical bills or they're going to have to make different decisions about rent or housing or other things because they're postponing medical care, right? That stress is significant. And it's also indicative of like other places that folks are lacking confidence in our state. So I think we have a broader mission around how we can restore these benefits, how we can continue being a partner in advancing our state towards a strong healthcare program. Because I think when we do, everybody wins. Whether you're an immigrant on HBIA, HBIS, whether you are a citizen that's on Medicaid or private insurance, when we strengthen the system for everyone, and we deserve a world class healthcare system in Illinois.
All right, well put. All right, now let's back away from this specific issue for a moment, talk about the larger context of what's going on politically in our state and our city. So again, you're advocating a compassionate program that would help people that are easily demonized and overlooked. At the same time, you're talking about this. There is a proposal afoot to fund a new dome stadium for the Chicago Bears on the lakefront of the city of Chicago. And just so you know where I am on this issue, Graciela, I am so opposed to this issue, to this idea. Sometimes I can't even get the words out. I feel like as a society, this is a step back in my humble opinion. Okay. And so you were talking about the opposition to, again, providing health care for people who need it. And there's a limited amount of money that the state has or the city has to spend on these things. And so using public dollars to build a stadium for billionaires who just pay for it themselves if they want a new stadium or just stay at Soldier Field. I mean, good God, it's not the end of the world to have a football game at Soldier Field. Just seems to be a contradiction. You know what I mean? You're taking money from people who most need it and giving it to people who don't need it. And it's already hard enough to get government to fund programs for people who really need it. It makes it even that harder when you're giving it to folks who don't need it. So that's my general view on how the Bears Stadium fits into this larger challenging moment we have in government. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think one, there's a lot to be figured out, right, still about this dome. It seems like we hear new financial analysis about what it's actually going to cost every time I open a piece of news. So I think just acknowledging we're walking in uncertainty. But, you know, I think that tension about how to have the dome proposal at the same time that we're talking about, you know, a shortfall for funding our schools at the same time that we should be talking about healthcare for all people or a variety of other issues. I think it goes back to the scarcity mindset that I was talking about at the top of the healthcare section, right? And so, you know, the conversation that I hope we can be having is how we can advance progressive revenue, how we can continue to expand the pie so that we can have all of these social needs that are met. And I think that's the most important and pressing conversation conversation that we can be having is how do we advance our state towards that mission? Because until that is met, we're going to continue to operate from scarcity mindset in our legislative work.
What do you mean by scarcity? I should get you to define that. Scarcity.
Yeah. So when I think scarcity mindset, you know, right, like it's almost the crab effect, right? If we are working with a finite number of resources and like let's say that we have crabs all in a hot pot, they're going to pull each other down. Mm-hmm. And so, and I think in a similar way, if we know we have a finite pie and that pie can only fund so many slices of issues, we're going to continue to pit coalitions and issues and municipalities and all kinds of folks against each other because it's the scarcity of what we perceive we don't have, right? And so my hope is that we can continue to advance our conversation around the players and folks that should be leaning into the interest in our community to help fund all of these social needs that need to be funded, and that we can start talking about abundance in our state as opposed to operating from scarcity.
I get you. And that makes it, I was just in my mind thinking about what you're talking about. Going, oh my God, that I hadn't even thought about that. I'm going to have to call this the Graciela theorem because I hadn't thought about this until you just articulated it. And that is this, the voters of Illinois and Chicago voted down the fair tax. You were talking about progressive ways to raise money to pay for basic government. So a few years ago, they voted down the fair tax, which would have raised the rates, income tax rates of the wealthiest people in Illinois to help fund government. And here in the city of Chicago, they just voted down Bring Chicago Home, which would raise rates on the sale of the most expensive housing in Chicago to raise money to house homeless people. Okay. And would, by the way, this is the part that blows my mind, it would cut the rates on everybody else. People voted against their own self-interest. Oh, yeah. God. So, and then the Bears proposal would give money to rich people. So we've just voted down two proposals that would tax rich people. Follow me on this, Graciela, to fund government. And now there's a proposal afoot to give money to rich people. I think the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois has lost its freaking mind. Your thoughts?
Well, again, proposals are proposals, right? And so what I'm hoping is that we can take the opportunity of this moment to continue to have that expanded conversation around the vested stake that we all have in funding the state, right? You know, I think what's cool about Healthy Illinois is that they've been doing this work for multiple years, well before I was even its campaign manager and well after me, right? And they and other folks have a vested stake in how we expand the pie, not just out of the self-interest of healthcare, but because our mutual dependence literally is going to depend on it, right? We could have opportunity. We can be talking about how we're implementing programs, but we have to be partners in that solution. And for me, that looks like a conversation about progressive revenue, about who is not helping us fund the safety net and how can we be partners in the solutions of that. So I'm looking forward to that, you know, as a hopeful future legislator next year.
All right. You know, I'm embarrassed if you got that big paw out looking for public money, maybe lend a hand to the next initiative to tax the wealthy. Here's just a thought. You want that state money, you want that public money, so maybe lend a hand. And you know, the next time there's an initiative for more progressive taxation, join the forces for it, which I doubt will ever happen, because if they wanted to be more progressive in government, they certainly wouldn't be seeking a handout. So I realize that's probably not going to happen. All right, Graciela, another issue of the day, which I'd love to get your thoughts on, is the abortion debate. And I've had guests on the show who from the Chicago Abortion Fund talking about the impact on Chicago as more and more states are choosing to severely restrict abortion rights. And in Florida this week, I think the law went into effect limiting abortions. You can't have an abortion after 6 weeks, I believe it is, in the state of Florida. So that's going to be sending women to Illinois, and probably because you can't get the service. Most women don't even know they're pregnant. And all of a sudden, by 6 weeks. So, and then there was a very heated debate in the Arizona State Senate yesterday. And so a brief explanation, ladies and gentlemen, if you listen to the show, you know this story well, but any rookies out there, you may not be paying attention to this. So the state of Arizona had a law on the books in 2022 that would allow abortion, I think, up to 15 weeks. It's a restrictive law, Graciela. It doesn't. I'm not sure it makes exceptions for rape or incest. It's a very restrictive law in many ways, but at least there were abortion rights up to 15 weeks. Previously, in 1864, when Arizona wasn't even a state, there was a law banning abortion. And when Roe was eradicated by the Supremes in the Dobbs decision, which left every state free to ban abortion, that no longer was recognized as a federal right, medical right, then Arizona eventually, because of the Supreme Court ruling in Arizona, brought back the 1864 ban. And Republicans, realizing that could be the kiss of death for them in the presidential election, like the national Republicans, like Donald Trump even, were suggesting to Arizona, hey, you got to do something. Just you got to do something to give us a break. So yesterday there was a vociferous debate in the state Senate of Arizona, and they got two state senators, Graciela, to join forces with all the Democrats. Okay, so just voters out there, get this image. All the Democrats voted to restore abortion rights. Only two Republicans out of all their, and the Republicans control of the Senate, voted for it. And those two were basically called traitors to the cause by the other outraged Republican senators. And I'll just read you, Graciela, just a bit of the debate that went down. Two state senators spoke up. Senator J.D. Mesnard, who represents the suburban swing district, held up his phone and played a sonogram recording of his daughter's heartbeat. If I vote yes, there will be fewer of these heart beatings. Okay. State Senator Anthony Kern, a Republican, who was also among Arizona's fake electors indicted last week in an election conspiracy case, said the Senate was betraying its opposition to abortion and predicted that the vote would pave the way for acceptance of pedophilia. I'm like, you, MAGA, you have lost your freaking minds. I mean, I'm reading this story, Graciela. One hand, the dude is saying that he's Trump won the election, that Trump lost, and he's going to battle over that, okay? And then on the other hand, somehow or other, abortion leads to pedophilia. The stuff that comes out of MAGA's brain these days, Graciela, I can't explain it or understand it. But this is the forces that exist right now, the pressures that our country is facing right now for MAGA on this issue of abortion. You're about to enter sort of the fray, if you will, when you go to the state Senate, and I'm just assuming you will go to the state Senate. How do you deal with an argument the MAGA argument about this is extreme views of what should just be a basic medical right for women? Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think the operative word there was the extreme, right? But understanding that in their extreme, there's a formula, right? It is based on misinformation, fear mongering, not necessarily about scientific or any other kind of semblance of accuracy sometimes, right? But understanding the formula then around us to dissect it, you know? So I think what was interesting about Arizona to me was allowing the viewpoint right into the Republican self-interest, right? The fact that those two were able to come over paves the way for some amount of, you know, electoral coverage for them. Right, presumably. And so I think understanding that there's moments that out of self-interest, Republicans and other folks can shift out of their normal talking points or, you know, what is being indoctrinated. And that if we are able to power build and understand that and remove what is obfuscating the actual argument and conversation, we can continue to operate the agenda that we want to build, right, which is a path of equity, compassionate, dignified, reasonable care for all people, right? But I think that was a fascinating foray into like their political calculus. But I think also the learning lesson that we can ultimately diffuse talking points, that we can build a base, and that we can lean into self-interest and bring folks along the across the aisle to make what needs to happen happen and protect people.
Well, just to be clear, I like the hopefulness embedded in your response. But just to be clear, one of the two state senators that voted with the Democrats made the following argument, Graciela.
Ooh, let's hear it.
I am now going to articulate the thoughts of a MAGA person. I don't get paid enough to do this show. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I've now entered the brain of MAGA. So follow me in this. In November, there's a movement afoot in Arizona to put have a statewide referendum on amending the Constitution to enshrine abortion as a state right. Okay. And there's a good chance that that would win if it gets on the ballot. So follow me on this. This is one of the most disingenuous arguments I've ever heard in my life. So this person from a swing district realizing, I think it's a he, it could be a woman, I can't remember at the moment, that his or her reelection hinges on voting for this measure while keeping the ferociously anti-abortion voters in line, has made the following argument. That voting to eradicate the 1864 law banning abortion will actually be a step closer to banning abortion, because it will reassure moderate voters, following me on this, Graciela, that there's no longer a need to pass the constitutional amendment that will enshrine abortion as a right. So therefore, they will vote against that, enshrining that as a right in the Constitution. And then in the following sessions, the MAGA can move back to making abortion more prohibitive. This was the argument that they, I'm like, I have to tell you, Graciela, I've been covering politicians for a long time, but that is one of the most disingenuous arguments. They're voting for abortion rights in the hopes that moderate voters will vote for them. And they're telling anti-abortion zealots that really what I'm doing is working to abolish abortion rights in our state. Your thoughts on that tactic?
Well, sometimes the math just doesn't math, right? And I definitely hear you on the disingenuousness of the base argument. And the whole time I was, you know, hearing you, I guess for me, it goes, this is why, one, when you have the initial win as movement, quote unquote, depending, regardless of how you got there, we still have to see it through on implementation, right? So I know Arizona is still talking about emergency rules. They're talking about other ways that they can make sure that we're talking about the 15 week, for example. And so it actually goes back to basically folks that helped us get there. We can't let down now. You can't go home and say we won this. We actually have to make sure that we continue the efforts to enshrine through constitutional amendment or other legislative means that are necessary. So for me, that's actually where my brain is operating. It's as much about taking the air out of those folks to be able to actually see that really convoluted path through to undo the abortion pathway, as it's going to be about the folks that helped get this fight in Arizona continuing to see it through so that enshrinement can happen.
I tend to be very jaded when it comes to having observed many Chicago elections about the way politicians talk to voters. And the way voters buy it. But I do not believe, I'm going to stand up for Arizona voters. I don't believe voters on either side of the aisle will fall for this line. No. I'm just telling you, Graciela.
People smell stuff a mile away. I do firmly believe that. And so if people know your record, regardless of how you voted, people know what you've said. And I think that's the thing about the talking points. They tend to circulate and live on in the ether of our community way longer than we as electeds or possible electeds want to give them credit for. So I do believe in the folk, in the ability of electorate to be more discerning.
All right. Let's close with another national issue that's breaking as we speak. And that is campus protests over Israel's ongoing slaughter in Gaza. Wow. I mean, this is getting intense. And back in the, this really does remind me of 68 in so many ways, Graciela, back in the late 60s when I was just a young lad at Evanston High School. No, I wasn't even at Evanston High School yet. I was still at Nichols Junior High. It's just, so now there's a counterattack. And so at UCLA yesterday, it was Wednesday, there was a counterattack when apparently pro-Israel counter-protesters attacked the pro-Palestinian protesters who had set up a tent encampment in UCLA. And then eventually the entire tent encampment was, the police came in after, I don't know, it was like an hour of fighting or something, and took down the tent encampment. And this reminds me of the late 60s when construction workers in New York attacked anti-war activists. And during this late 60s, early 70s, and showed their support for Richard Nixon. It just shows how raw this issue is in our country right now and how volatile it is in our country right now. And I'm trying to figure out what the proper response a university should have and what the proper response state and local officials should have in protests like with the, like this. Do you have any insights to offer?
Yeah, I mean, I've been thinking about, you know, the student movement and what it's helped us accomplish in the past, right? And, you know, you mentioned the 60s and thinking about the civil rights movement and freedom of speech for students and so many of provisions that come out of that. I think we know what can come out of, like, the movements that we're seeing all around the country. I think to your point, like, some of the stickiness and tension that I've heard in our community and from various players, you know, is the tension between wanting to model and allow discourse and what that looks like for young people in a grounded way, while feeling a lot of tension around how to keep people safe, how to allow for that discourse to actually happen. And in some cases, some like really real state-based pressure, right, for what that action and intervention look like. And my hope that, you know, the same way that some of those institutions are talking about modeling, that those processes are open, right, that the young people that are choosing to put body, energy, time on the line on behalf of their causes are being met in an open pathway of good intent by the administrations of their schools to hear, you know, what their suggestions and call for this moment is and what that's pushing forwards to, that those institutions can in good faith broker the same discourse that they're hoping that their students can have amongst each other. And three, that, you know, we're not meeting folks punitively. You know, I think one of the concerns I've had is in various institutions is I've been watching from a ways and that some of these students are in harm's way of being jailed and not be able to return to school, for example, you know, some of the really real damage that's occurring in institutions and how that's perpetuating underlying tensions. But it's a complex issue. And I think the basic tenet that I hope we can have is openness and transparency with students and other folks that are calling for these movements of social justice, not just here in the United States, but abroad.
Yeah, I'm not sure how they can achieve all those goals that you laid out, because like I said, the pressure on universities from all sides is evident here at Northwestern in Evanston, where the president thought he had a deal of sorts with student protesters to take down their encampment. And in exchange, he would set up some oversight, some transparency on university investments, which, as a geek for more information, I welcome that one. I said, OK, yeah, let's see where the investments are going. And let's see where Northwestern is investing. I thought that was good. But I was minority in that one, Graciela, because it's been assailed on both sides. So there are activists who say the students at Northwestern sold out and betrayed the larger Palestinian cause. Meanwhile, there's pro-Israeli protesters who are saying the president sold out allowed bullies to dictate to him actions. And so he sort of like condoned what they had done. And so I'm like, wow, man, you can't win for losing in this battle.
No, I think to your point, it is absolutely tension filled and difficult. And it might be the idealist in me here today, but, you know, I'm hopeful again that we can see a good resolution. And I think, you know, there is a dynamic of we're not going to be able to make people happy, but we do have to be able to pull voices together for common good. And I think this is an exercise in play about how we do that in times of like incredible hostility with very little time. I think to your point earlier about being able to do the transparent and open processes that I would like to see on campuses all over. But I'm hopeful Northwestern and other institutions can find a resolution that makes sense for the communities.
All right. Very good. Graciela Guzman, thank you so much for coming on the show. We'll talk to you real soon. All right.
Thank you, Ben.
All right. That's Graciela Guzman. I also want to thank producer Chris. He does an outstanding job. And I'm sure Graciela agrees with me when I said, hey, producer Chris, give yourself a raise. Take it out of petty cash. Peace and love, everybody.
And remember, previous Ben Jarofsky shows available at your leisure at chicagoreader.com. Follow Ben on Instagram at Benny J Show. And don't forget to tell your friends, like, subscribe, and follow the Ben Jarofsky Show on your favorite streaming and podcasting platforms.
Have you ever wondered how to say good morning in Italian? Or what is goodbye in French? You can ask Alexa. Just say, what is happy birthday in German? Or how do you say hello in Japanese? Do you want to know how to say I love you in Spanish? Ask Alexa and start learning a new language today.